And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show post-draft edition with Ari Wasserman, which means there will be some Stars Matter chatter in this episode because Ari and I cannot talk about the draft without talking about how it affects recruiting, how it helps us analyze recruiting. There's a lot that we can do with this data. But the piece of data, Ari, that I cannot get out of my head, that I spent a lot of Thursday night and Friday during the day thinking about this because there was nothing anybody could do about it at the time. The first round ended, a Big 12 player had not been selected. The second round began with the selection of a Georgia player, still not a Big 12 player. And you didn't get your first Big 12 player selected until Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State. When he was selected, there had been 16 SEC players selected already. 16. How do you reverse? Like, because when you're recruiting, what's the most important thing, Ari, to a recruit? What do they want the most?
I think we're going to have a major drop-off on listens this week because if people are tired of hearing this, they're not tired. You agree. The idea...
No, they love it.
The number one thing and the number one indicator will always be how will you make me a millionaire?
Exactly.
And I'm not talking
and
NIL.
And an 8 through NIL, exactly. It's can you get me drafted high? That's it.
You know, and what's crazy... And I think that the numbers for the first round are a little bit juiced because of Alabama having 6 in the first round. But the Big Ten
LSU had 5 last year and had 0 this year in the first round.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem is it's cyclical too.
Yeah, it ebbs and flows. And that means that LSU is probably going to be really good this year. So the Big Ten was the only Power 5 conference that produced more first rounders than Alabama. The other first round totals for the other conferences, Big 12 0, Pac-12 3. And that's pretty insane. Alabama had more first rounders in the Big 12 and the Pac-12 combined. And I think the ACC had 5. So, you know, it's just an interesting situation right now because you look at what Alabama's producing. And everybody knows what they're bringing in and everybody knows what they're producing. But when you start talking about talent gap and trying to visualize how this is manifesting in the game of college football, there's two things, right? How is it coming in and how is it going out? I personally think there's a direct correlation because it's a fact. But
right,
if it's coming out,
we have other numbers to back that up.
Yeah. Either way you look at it, it's coming out better and it's going in better. So if you want to put yourself in a position to beat Alabama, you know, in your program, that's probably a 15-year process based on what they're doing right now cumulatively. But it's just a insane disparage. It's disparaging. Is that the right word?
I know what you're trying to say. It is a disparity that is in itself disparaging.
Disparaging, yes.
To the Big 12.
You know, and the idea of it is if you're trying to figure out exactly how much more talented Alabama is than the one team they're playing, that's a big gap. But like when you put it in the context of an entire conference's talent, it's just another way of looking at it and saying, hey, Alabama's second and maybe third stringers might be starters on every other team except Alabama's not a good example because the SEC also has other top-heavy teams, but let's use Ohio State since they both had 10 draft picks and that was the most. And I can't believe that the teams with the most draft picks total played for the national title this year. I know it's insane.
Crazy, right?
But Ohio State's second and third stringers probably would start at every other Big Ten school, you know? And it's really, really hard to wrap your mind around it, but upsets happen, but the amount of talent that's gravitating toward the top of the sport is more lopsided, and I would bet my life on it. Even before we started keeping track of stars in the 90s and the 80s, it's never been this bad. And I wonder if it was even this bad before they had scholarship limits.
I don't think it was ever this bad. And you and I have talked about this a lot. With there's an era of the super team going on in college football that probably has a lot to do with the rise of social media and the connectivity that recruits have these days, where they all want to go play together. Because, you know, even 15, 20 years ago, they wouldn't. You'd have a Pied Piper kind of guy, but he'd be a kid from Jacksonville who would try to get the other really good players in Florida to go wherever he was going at some camps. Now it's the top five talk, and they say, oh, well, we're going to all go play at Clemson, or we're going to all go play at Alabama, or we're all going to go play at Ohio State. And it's really hard to break into that club now. But you just got me thinking. And this is when I know our producer Cam's going to wind up clipping this as the tease that we put out on social media.
That's how you know you're about to drop fire before you drop it.
Based on what we've seen in the draft the last 3 or 4 years, what would the line be for the Big 12 All-Stars versus Alabama? What's the line on that game?
Bama -7.5.
I thought you'd say that. That's insane. That is insane. You could create an all-star team from a Power 5 conference, and Alabama would be favored to beat it. And I think Ohio State might too.
Listen, I don't care what you make, what roster you make out of the Big 12, they're going to have 6 less first-round draft picks in Alabama. So let me ask you this. What's the line in any game where the first-round draft pick disparity is 6-0? Like, it doesn't matter how – I mean, and listen, in college football – if you have all Big Ten or all Big 12 players who get drafted in the second and third round, there's still a lot of very good players that get drafted in the second and third round. And if you put a second and third and fourth rounder at every single spot, you know, it'd probably be a good game. But we're not also using Alabama's second and third rounders. Alabama had a few. So, like, they also
and
have
a long
those
snapper
too.
In the sixth round.
So, you know, the idea of how good it is, you can't assemble a team in – And maybe the SEC is the only conference that this doesn't apply to, but the super team in every conference, and the Pac-12 unfortunately right now doesn't have one, but if you took a super team from the ACC and the Big Ten and you made that, they couldn't beat the number one teams in that conference. And maybe a little bit closer to Clemson this year because, you know, Clemson hasn't really started recruiting at that level that you're seeing, that top three level, until recently. But the amount of just bona fide – like Ohio State has a Jameson Williams as a receiver who just entered the transfer portal last week. And like Alabama is a team that he's reportedly considering. Like that kid is a stud and he can't get to the field at Ohio State because they have so many other players at that position. And it's just like how many other teams are having potential all-conference players transfer because they're blocked on the depth chart? The amount of talent is just insane.
It is unbelievable. And it's the problem. This is the problem in college football. This is why they're talking about expanding the playoff, because everybody's tired of these teams just dominating and being the only ones who have a chance to win the national championship. And I will say, interesting the way you said it, because it feels like the SEC is a little bit different situation, where there are teams that feel like every once in a while they can build up and beat Alabama. I mean, 2019, LSU is your best example of that. And it feels like this year Georgia could be talented enough, and maybe LSU again, and maybe Texas A&M. So that at least they're trying to keep pace. These other leagues, you've got Ohio State lapping the field in the Big Ten. One thing I will argue about the Big 12 situation this year is a lack of Oklahoma draft picks at the top, which suggests to me that Oklahoma is just going to kick everybody's butt this year because they've got a bunch of dudes that are going to kill people.
But you know what's insane, too, is that Alabama had 6 first-round draft picks and their national championship opponent had 1 first-round draft pick, which is kind of a down year for Ohio State in the sense of top-end talent. And then look what happened. It's just like there are straight lines to be drawn from recruiting rankings to success in the sport, and there's straight lines between which teams are actually the best in the sport and which players are best going out. And Alabama had the best classes coming in, they had the best teams, they won national championships, and now their players are the best on the way out. And I think Alabama, and maybe this will be a deeper into the offseason discussion, but I think that Alabama this year might have a case to being the most talented team in college football history because of, you know, A, tying the record with, was it 2004 Miami for most first-round draft picks, and then having another player drafted pretty high up in the second round. You know, this team had a lot of really talented players who might have been first-round draft picks a year ago inexplicably come back to form this team. And the fact that they won the national championship in such a messed-up year is, in a way, poetic justice, because in a year where we weren't sure that we were even going to get a championship, the team that deserved it and was built to win it the most won it. And I think that we can, like, feel good that we got through COVID with that result. But, you know, the question that you're going to go into, or inevitably going to get to, is how do we stop this? And, like, this is a discussion that we talk about all the time. How do you recruit differently? What do you need outside of the right coach to do that? Is it an expanded playoff, which is a discussion in the past few weeks? Is it potential scholarship limit reductions to make sure there's more talent to go around in others? Whereas
they're not going to do that. They're not.
I don't think they
that.
Should. I'll tell you right I'm now. Just saying, like, what if you brainstorm for hours? I don't know that you would be able to come up with a logical solution to that problem that would be fair to everybody. Because if you reduce scholarship limits, you're taking away opportunities from athletes who deserve it. And that's right. Not, you know, supposedly what the NCAA is all about. So what recruiting rules could you institute that you can't recruit from kids that are in different time zones? Can't do that. What if a kid wants to go to a certain school because they have an educational program that best suits his interests? Not that that's usually the case, but still, you can't do that. I'm trying to come up, like, what would you do in a fair way to make sure that the recruiting rankings aren't so lopsided? Do you have to, like, institute a salary cap for assistants and staffers on the team in order to do that?
They've already tried that. They lost the court case. They can't do that.
Can you do a salary cap or a employee cap for recruiting staffers? Because I know Ohio State's got 10. Can't do that. So, like, help me here, man. What are we doing?
This is the problem. There's nothing, from a rules of the game standpoint that you can do about it. There are the rules that would be most effective. A draft, you obviously can't do without a collective bargaining agreement and paychecks for the players.
By the way, that would be amazing, though. Could you imagine if there was a draft?
with the first pick, Bowling Green selects. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Oh, it'd be unbelievable. And there'd be trades.
Talk about the coverage.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Dude, yeah, imagine if we covered Ohio State and Bowling Green in the same sentence from a draft preparation standpoint. And then also think about what we would be doing for mock drafts and trades and all the things. Think about how obsessive people are about the NFL draft. And rightfully so, because people are always more interested in the future than the current. But that would be over 100 round draft.
Well, it'd be a 25 round draft with 130 picks in each round.
Oh yeah, yeah, right.
So, yeah, that'd be rough. That'd be rough covering.
I'd watch the whole thing.
I know you would.
They'd have Barton Simmons up there on TV saying, "This is a kid that I've been covering since he was 16 years old. He's finally developed into a man."
Barton Simmons is the Mike Mayock of that world. He's already working for a team.
Yeah, and I wrote a story about that last week. It's funny. And that's probably a question in the mailbag too, but, like, that's going to be a trend more. But, like, it would be funny if they had, like, 247 reporters in every city. I just think we just fixed the entire sport.
With the 129th pick, Ohio State selects. Wow.
St. Thomas Aquinas would be the powerhouse high school program, and then you'd have recruiting to high school programs that develop you into a first-round college pick.
Oh, it's so cute, Ari, that you think recruiting to high school programs would start then.
It's not what I mean. I just mean it would be like we'd have to have coverage of it, like what middle schoolers.
I don't know how to tell you this, but the best players in South Florida tend to find their way to St. Thomas Aquinas as it is.
Yeah, no, I'm not that naive, I promise.
So Josh Palmer drafted, what was he, third, fourth round this year? He was like the fourth receiver on his St. Thomas Aquinas team that also included Elijah Moore.
Think about how much more money real estate agents would make for selling and buying homes in non-private school situations that people are transferring into. I mean, that's the recruiting I'm talking about. I'm not saying private school.
Armwood, Florida. That's right.
What is Glenville High School in Cleveland? Home values are skyrocketing. All of a sudden. And trust me, having just gone through a buying a home process for the first time in my life, I understand more so now than ever how much school district impacts the value of a home. So in that way, we could boost the economy. Look, we're just saving the world right now.
I love it. I love it. I wish some of this stuff would work. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of administrative stuff you can do, because the simplest thing would be to lower the scholarship limit, which you cannot do. It would be the most hypocritical thing they could possibly do. And really, let's say you took 10 scholarships away. Well, okay, at the FBS level, that means you just eliminated 1,300 scholarships. Like,
right.
Why would you do that? That's just not right.
And you also can't limit how many, like you could make a stars cap, but stars are subjective. So then what you would do is you would find fraud within the recruiting
world.
Just game
the system.
Like there's no reasonable solution. And like, I think changing the sport as it is by expanding the playoff is like the best explanation that we can come up with. But expanding the playoff, I think might help maybe 1% or 5%. But it's not going to change the lopsided nature of the talent coming in and out of these programs. And
it's not going to keep these same teams from being in it every year. But what it might do, Ari, and this is, I think this is the hope, is the identity of the ones at the bottom of the bracket would change. So that keeps more people interested. And also just make those superpowers play another hard game where there is a chance they might lose or something doesn't break their way and they do lose, which, by the way, is great television.
But even if they do lose, all that matters is the results on the paper that we're going to go through. Wins and losses don't matter.
Well, they do, because they can't win the national championship. So that matters to people in the moment. It doesn't matter long term. Alabama, as long as Nick Saban's at Alabama and Kirby Smart's at Georgia, Ryan Day's at Ohio State, it's going to be like that. We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
There is something you can do to try to turn your fortunes around. And we saw Texas do it this year. So they took the offensive coordinator from Alabama, the guy who's had 4 first-round receivers in the last 2 years, who's had 2 first-round quarterbacks in the last 2 years, and he's now the head coach at Texas. And Ari, do you know who the last first-rounder from the University of Texas was?
Off the top of my head, I don't.
Malcolm Brown. The defensive tackle, not the running back. 2015. The University of, by God, Texas has not had a first rounder since 2015.
I know. I went and I added this up too, you know, just to bring more context to this for a story. And this isn't including this year's draft, because they actually had a pretty good draft. But when people were asking, like, what's wrong with Texas, when, because people like to use exceptions, and I'm sure we'll talk about Michigan as an exception too in this, because there are teams that weren't very good that had a lot of draft picks, because Michigan had 5, yeah. I believe.
And Michigan's had them in throughout the Harbaugh era. They've been pretty good in the draft.
And I've got people tweeting at me saying, well, Michigan had 5. What about stars with them? You know, and we'll get to that. But cumulatively speaking, I think in the last 7 years or 6 years, this stat is based on memory only, so don't tweet at me and tell me I'm an idiot. But I think that it was like in the last 5 to 7 years, Alabama had 60-some first-rounders. Ohio State had 50-something first-rounders. And Texas had like 14 or something
like
that.
I wrote it in a story. And it's obscene. I wrote it before Alabama played Ohio State for the national title. And that was what I kind of figured out just looking at those numbers. Texas's problem, because you look at the recruiting rankings, Texas compares very favorably to Alabama and Ohio State. They're not quite where they are recruiting wise, but they're doing fine. They actually are very similar to Clemson and have been better than Oklahoma in terms of recruiting rankings. But Oklahoma produces more draft picks by quite a bit and better draft picks, which tells you they're developing the players better. Clemson produces much better draft picks and much better results, which tells you they're developing the players better. So that's what Texas has to do. Sarkisian has to make draft picks. He has to make first rounders. And that's the only way you can recruit too, because right now, if you are a recruit and you are considering, let's say you're in Houston, you're the next Jalen Waddle, and you're considering Texas and Oklahoma, but you've also got Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M after you. I mean, Alabama and Texas A&M and LSU will all show you the results of the draft this year and say, look at what conference these people play in and look at what conference they don't play in. And you're probably crossing two pretty big time programs off your list pretty quick.
Yeah. And I want people to understand this, and I've said it before, but I want to say it as clearly as possible. My premise has never been that all you have to do to win is recruit well. That's not, I'm not saying that the second you sign a top two class, you're going to win a national championship. Development,
don't
culture.
Don't subtweet Kirby Smart, just add him.
Oh, I don't even know what you're talking about.
this is what, where all
what,
the,
you, what on earth are you speaking of that I'm not? I don't understand.
I just know there's Georgia fans that are grumbling right now, and then there's fans of other SEC schools that are like, see, that's Georgia. Now, you've been listening to us for a while. We both think Georgia's going to break through at some point.
Yeah, no. Recruiting. And this isn't a dig at any specific program.
But continue to make fun of them till they do.
Yeah, and it's not a dig at any specific program, because I think you could say the same thing about Michigan and you could say the same thing about Texas. And the problem is that without the recruiting ranking results, you don't have a chance. Now, obviously, you still need coaches, strength coaches, development, culture, you know, all those things in order to actually go out into the field and win it. And you have to be able to identify lower rated prospects that turn out to gems. You can't have misses. There's everything that's involved in it. But my only point has always continually been, if you don't recruit at a high level, you have 0% chance of winning a national championship, which is why Texas and Georgia and sometimes Michigan are teams that are physically talented enough to maybe do it that year. There are 10 teams a year that can win a national championship, and I think that's being kind of generous. And there are teams that aren't in the same world as Ohio State, Georgia, and Alabama in the recruiting results that still are talented enough to do it. But if you're on the outskirts of that, where you're at 9, 10, 11, your odds go down. And if you're in the 15 to 20 range or the 20 to 40 range, you're completely out of it. So obviously there's a lot that goes into the recipe of winning a national championship in this sport. But it's like making a soup, a chicken noodle soup without chicken broth. You need the broth to make a good soup. And if you don't have the broth, then you don't even need to bother even thinking about whether or not it could be the best chicken noodle soup on the planet, because you don't have the main ingredient for what it takes to make that soup. Does that make sense?
It makes
sense. So don't like tweet at me and tell me that like teams still had a lot of draft picks. And yeah, those are the teams where their coaches are getting fired or restructuring their deals to take half the money. It's because they're not doing their jobs once those players are in the program.
You brought up Michigan, and Kwity Paye went in the first round for Michigan. Kwity Paye is the best story of the draft. He's an amazing story. His mom is so brave, getting him out of getting the family out of that situation, getting them to the U.S., working three jobs for most of the time they've been here, and then he got to say, "Mom, you've retired." It's a beautiful story. Kwity Paye is from Rhode Island. He's a three-star. He was a three-star player. He was developed at Michigan into a first-round draft pick. That's a wonderful story. You cannot win championships based on three stars that you turn into first-rounders, because that doesn't happen that often. You need more players like Jalen Waddle, who was a four-star, but on the cusp of a five-star. He was the number 39 overall player in the country, and he's a first-rounder. Well, Alabama's got a bunch of those guys. And guess what? I think the Alabama coaches could take
a three-star type like Quiddy Pay and turn him into a first rounder too. They're good at the development part too. And that's the thing. You have to get the five stars and develop them. And if you do that, you're going to get the three stars and develop them too. But you still need the five stars that you can develop into first rounders as well.
Because people think that the programs that develop the three star into a five star are doing something that the teams that are
They're somehow better people than the other.
There's still three star athletes going to Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson that are turning into first round draft picks too. That's only like one fifth of the battle. And like, listen, five star prospects are the easiest things to identify. But my opinion should be hitting top 100 players. Because I do think that there is a negligible difference between the number 32 overall player in the country and the number 68 overall player.
Right.
When you start getting into players 500 to 1,000, that's when it becomes a complete crapshoot. But when you're in the top 100, you're the elite of the elite. And seven of the top 12 picks in this year's draft, which means the most truly elite players in the sport this year, were top 100 prospects. And the ones that weren't were like quarterbacks that came out of nowhere. And I think that's a different discussion too, like what Zach Wilson and Trey Lance mean for recruiting the quarterback position.
Right.
And maybe, you know, the right system and the right growth spurt and all the things that have to go into account in order to become a great quarterback in the next level isn't necessarily as, you know, reliant on your physical ability like it would be for a defensive tackle. But 7 out of 12. And when you think about the thousands and thousands of three-star prospects that are in the sport right now that could have factored into that equation, the mathematics behind that is infallible. It's not a discussion. It's not an argument. It is a fact. I don't understand how there are still people out there that don't get it.
Well, let's break down the first round by stars. So there's 32 first-round picks. 17 of them were five stars or four stars. Okay. That's the line on four stars, Ari, is about number 400 in the country, right?
Yeah, roughly, like in between 375. And it changes every year, but 400 is a good estimation.
Yeah. So then the number of three stars, you're going down to like number 2300.
Right.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of people.
Over the course of time, like, it means like roughly 10% of those who sign annually are five and four star prospects, 10%. And the rest, 90% of the sport are three stars.
But they make up over 50% of the first rounders this year. This is interesting. Because usually you just can't help this happening. There were no unranked first rounders this year.
There was a two star, Peyton Turner.
But that's not unranked. That's a two-star. Was ranked. Which
Justin Jefferson was unranked last year, right?
Yeah. And there's a lot of times you have a guy who went to a JUCO, walked on somewhere, had this massive growth spurt, you know, or had played basketball all the way through high school and never played football and then got into football. So you have a lot of stories like that. There wasn't that this year. They cast the net over the entire first round, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, you know, and it's just individual success stories of crazy development or over exceeding what your recruiting ranking indicated that you would be are wonderful, heartwarming stories, overcoming adversity, becoming something nobody thought you can be. Those are all the things that we like to follow in sports. And when they happen once out of every 2,000 players a year that are ranked that way, they're nice stories. They are in no way an indication of the way things work.
Them such great stories.
If they were common, then they wouldn't be. Yeah, it wouldn't be a thing. So take the math for what it is. One out of every 2,500 players a year is going to turn out to be a first round draft pick. The rest of the ones that are coming in at the elite rankings are the ones that are the elite athletes that Stevie Wonder could identify are elite by watching them. And then after that, they become elite in college. The programs that get the elite players out of high school get credit for developing them into a draft pick, even though they're already built physically from an advancement standpoint to get to that point. And then they get more five-star prospects because of the credit that they got because they signed them.
Well, so before we have our Big 12 versus Alabama game, which I do think probably should be one they play at the end of the season, sort of for charity or something. If you're Steve Sarkisian, what are you doing right now? How are you combating that? Because he's been on one side of it where he's been recruiting players to Alabama. And I guarantee you, saying this stuff to anybody who's considering going to a different place or a different league, if you're Steve Sarkisian now and you're recruiting against Alabama and recruiting against LSU and recruiting against Oklahoma and Texas A&M and Ohio State and the people that are coming into your state trying to take the best players that you want, how do you combat that?
I would do exactly what Tom Herman did in 2015. I would take out my national championship trophy and put it on the front of my desk at the University of Houston, and I would say, I was a part of that. I know how that works. It's not or hasn't happened here before, but being somebody who was a chef in the kitchen that produced that perfection, I'm going to do it again here. And you can help change the way that that works. And I think you own the Alabama stuff. And Texas is going to face Alabama in the recruiting game very often because Alabama has houses here in Texas that the coaches sleep in because they never leave the state. And I think you have to own being one of them before you beat them. I don't think separating yourself is the right thing. I think making yourself not known and visible as somebody who contributed to the machine, who knows how to reproduce it, that's the plan. That's what I would do.
I think that
that's
works.
The only
I think,
thing you can do.
Yeah. And the thing is, not then you've got to make a few first rounders. And if you can, if they have some play, like let's say Bijan Robinson is a first rounder in 2 years, that's a start. That's how you do it. Because guys who are 17, 18 years old, they have pretty short memories. So if you can have a run where you get 3, 4, 5 guys selected in the first round in like 3 different drafts, suddenly their ears are perked up. They're interested. You're in the same boat as some of these. Now, maybe not Alabama where they're, 6 first round guys, but you are very much in the competition with everybody else.
But how much does Sark get to absorb Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle? Like, that's the thing. And I, coincidentally, the first story that I went on the road for when I moved to Texas was down to Austin to visit 5-star wide receiver Caleb Burton, who lives in the Austin area and is committed to and plans to sign with Ohio State. And I went to write about him, and I was talking to him and his dad off the record and on the record, and they just
I was going to say,
said,
don't say what they said off the record. You're not allowed to do that.
No. Off the record, we were just hanging out. On the record, and you can go read it in the story. I'll just repeat it. They just don't develop draft picks. That's all
they
care
about.
That's
what they
said. Yeah, that's what they said. And they wanted to follow the Garrett Wilson plan, who was another 5-star wide receiver from Austin who went to Ohio State and will most assuredly be a first-round draft pick a year from now. And Sarkisian could say, listen, I got Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle into the league as first-round draft picks. I'm a wide receiver guru. I am an offensive guru. I designed their entire offense. I won that national championship to come here. And even that's not enough. So what you have to do is maybe make that sales pitch on 5-star prospects and maybe succeed with 1 or 2, which is a great conversion rate in your own state. There's no shortage of talent. And you try to do what you can in order to make that happen. And by going out and getting those kids, it puts you in a position in a few years to put yourself in that conversation. Now, what's the thing that everybody would say when you talk about the criticism of what Tom Herman did? Nobody says he sucked at recruiting. They say he didn't know how to develop the talent and win big games.
Right.
And, the thing that he has complete control over now, Sark at Texas.
Who's the highest drafted player that Tom Herman coached as a head coach?
Didn't you just say it was Malcolm Brown?
No, he played for Charlie.
Oh, has it been that long already? God.
Yeah.
It feels like it was, it's, I feel like, this yeah,
is,
times,
this
yeah.
is a little, this is a little bit of a trick question. Who's the highest drafted player that Tom Herman coached as a head coach?
I don't want to embarrass myself. Oh, I thought you meant only at Texas. That's obvious.
But it wasn't at Texas. That's the point.
No, I know. And the thing that, just to make Texas fans feel more comfortable, right now, Texas has 8 commitments in their 2022 class, and I think 5 of them are in the top 160. 4 of them are in the top 106, and he's got 3 top 100 players. So there is hope there.
That
there's something to build
chance.
There. And once you get them into the program, once you get them into the program, the thing that he has to do more so than recruit at a high level, because that's already been happening. You have to be the worst coach in the history of college football to not recruit elite classes at Texas. Okay, so if you are still recruiting at a high level there, you have to fix the development part that Tom Herman couldn't figure out. Like, the good news is, for any program, the hardest thing, really, Andy, is if you're taking over a new program, you have to figure out how to recruit. I think that's a much bigger problem than figuring out how to effectively develop them. Like, I feel like the hard part for Texas is over, and now the easy part with a coach that knows what is missing in order to create those draft picks enters. And having a front row seat at Alabama gives you a really good idea of what the recipe is. Because I think the question that I ask myself and Bill Landis all the time when we are on our Ohio State podcast, 4-6 with A&B, we discuss all the time, what is in the secret sauce at Alabama that isn't at Ohio State? Because even though Ohio State is in the conversation of a team that recruits at a high level and is playing for national championships, they are still leaps and bounds behind Alabama. There's no denying that. So what is the thing that Alabama is doing with similar recruiting results to produce teams to win national championships this regularly? And if the answer is just Nick Saban is a wizard, then maybe that's just the case. But if there's something going on with the program that is happening internally that you can learn from with a front row seat the way that Sark had, to me, that gives me a lot of hope that the one thing that's missing at Texas could change, which is development, because he's seen the best coach in the history of the sport do it up close and personal, right?
I'll give you an argument as to what Alabama's trick is. It's not a trick.
I would like to know. I'd love to know your theory on this.
Because I think this is something. This is not something that was going on, I think, 8-9 years ago. I think this is only something that they could do after they had established that, hey, if you come here, you're going to play for the national championship and you're probably going to win it and you're probably going to have a good chance of being a first-round draft pick. They have created a self-selecting sample of recruits who they're the ones that are all about business. They're not thinking about anything but trying to become a first-rounder. They are only there to put in the work. You know, they have a different mindset. And, you know, I remember talking to Jonathan Allen, who I think is kind of like the quintessential Nick Saban player. And he was saying, you know, I hear people say we don't have fun. To me, winning is fun. The other stuff, that's how you get to it. But I'm not here to have fun. I'm here to make myself better. And I think they've now gotten a bunch of guys that every year, that's who signs up for this. And that's, I mean, they can turn down 5-star and 4-star players that they don't want because those guys may not want to be part of that culture. And I don't think there's any other program really that can turn down 5-star talent.
Well, who do they turn down?
Probably Clemson. There have been guys.
Because there's no such thing at Ohio State, when I covered them, I've never seen a 5-star, unless there's off-the-field issues and you're concerned about
eligibility. But that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. And there are, if you're below, you know, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, all those guys can turn that down. They can avoid an off-field problem and say,
and there
you
are
know
a few
what?
Names that probably stick go out to people without else. Us having
yeah.
to say
go,
it.
Go somewhere else. And there's a bunch of other schools that will say, you're a 5-star? Come on.
Which is what we they should care. Do. If I were the head coach at Tennessee right now, I would take any troubled athlete that I could in order to try to do it. And I know that's a headache, and I know that being a head, but like you have to get the talent in somewhere, and you take the troubled kid and you try your ass off to make him a straight arrow.
It's a little bit what Urban Meyer did at Florida.
Of course, a little bit, right?
And didn't have to do it at Ohio State once he got there.
Which is why he took the Ohio State job to begin with, because he didn't want to do that again. And I think look, Florida had its issues, and you know. They have two national championships, and of course there's a lot of off-the-field stories that I'm sure that people would love to hear around a campfire with you while you crack open a beer. But like the fact of the matter is that the idea is if a kid is recruitable and he hasn't committed a crime, then there should be hope for that kid. So like the idea of I don't want to deal with this or he's untakeable is a subjective thing based on where you are in your career. And if you're a coach trying to build a program – you don't have the ability or the you don't have the ability to say no thanks. Your job is to help that kid help your program. He wins by going into a place that is able to take him while others can afford to say no. You win by getting the talent, and then you guys win together by development and getting that kid on track, both on the field and in his life. That is the recipe.
And if you don't, and that kid gets in trouble, you may get fired over it. That's the risk.
Well,
you take.
It just depends.
But you get fired for losing too.
You get fired for losing, but like the only way that you get fired for taking a bad apple is if you are negligent about how to handle things
or try to cover up something that they did so they can stay on the team. Yeah.
So you can't control anybody's actions. You can recruit anybody, and if you know there's and certainly there are kids with higher risks of potentially getting in trouble, but I can't, and you can't, and no coach can control what a kid decides to do in the spur of a moment. When I was 17, I did really stupid stuff. When I was 18, I did stupid stuff all the time.
I always wonder when a player gets in trouble and the player doesn't have a prior arrest record or anything like that, and everybody's like, that coach should have done something. I'm like, what is he? Is he a precog from Minority Report? Like, how's he supposed to know that?
And I think you could make an argument, and I don't mean to keep bringing up Ohio State as an example, but that's what I know. And Urban Meyer, who is considered one of the best coaches to do, I've seen it. Ohio State's cut kids that are super talented loose after making mistakes, and I'm not saying violent mistakes or mistakes that are unforgivable, but certain mistakes. And then those kids were worse off after being let go from the program because they had no more structure in their lives. So there's a lot, and I've seen it, and I don't want to name names because it's not fair to those people, but there are kids that are no longer playing football and are off doing whatever it is that they're doing right now that made stupid mistakes when they were in school that weren't afforded the opportunity to stay. Whereas at places that are building, they might have a higher leash in order to do that. So, you know, the thing that is most interesting to me, Andy, is on paper, and I guess personalities are different, but on paper, Ohio State and Alabama have very similar recruiting results. Both just beat the record for best recruiting class in the history of recruiting rankings. Mm-hmm. And right now, blindly, you have to think that Alabama's class in 4 years is going to be more successful than Ohio State's because that's what happens every time. And the stat is, has Nick Saban signed one class that hasn't won at least one national title under him at Alabama? That's the stat, right?
Not yet.
Every single class he's ever signed has won a national championship. Ohio State has signed insanely good classes and has only won since Urban was hired in 2012. So to me, what's the difference between those two programs, both of which are very high-level programs that have developed draft picks at a high level, have good infrastructure, talented coaches, great minds, great development, you know, great strength coaches. What is in the sauce at Alabama that makes them not better than Ohio State, but infinitely better than Ohio State? Because I think part of this discussion, too, is that Alabama is creating a threshold or a expectation to duplicate that isn't something that is able to be duplicated. So we have to identify if Nick Saban is just the only person on earth who can do this at any place ever, or if there is something that even the other elite level programs that are competing head to head with Alabama can do to duplicate that. Because right now, Clemson's not doing it. Ohio State's not doing it. Georgia's not doing it. Who's doing it? Is it just Saban and that's it?
At that level, it's Saban. Now, one guy who seems to be picking up steam and getting to that point is Mario Cristobal, who, of course, was coaching at Alabama before he went to Oregon with Willie Taggart and then wound up taking over for Taggart when he left for Florida State. But he's doing it very much the same way of sign these elite classes, develop them into first rounders, you know, just make them better football players. And look, Ohio State does that too. You know, think about the position coaches at Ohio State. Larry Johnson, one of the best D-line coaches you will ever find anywhere. I mean, he's spectacular. Brian Hartline, great receivers coach. It's not a case of just developing them better at Alabama. And remember, it's been a rotating cast of assistant coaches at Alabama. So I don't know if it's the way Saban kind of imbues them with that mindset. Because, you know, we always joke when they talk at Alabama, they sound like robots and they all sound like Nick Saban. But honestly, if you live your life that way, it seems like it works.
Yeah. I'm actually trying to look this up right now, Andy, about total draft picks between Ohio State and Alabama since 2012. I bet you the difference is probably less than 10.
It was around 10.
So let's say it's 10 and extrapolate that over the course of almost a decade. Alabama has won how many national championships since 2012? Is it five?
2012, 2015, 2017, and 2020. So four.
So four? So they're winning four times as much as Ohio State with similar recruiting results and similar draft results. There's something. So like, and that, I think this is a good way to veer into the Michigan discussion that we're probably going to have, right?
Although, because, you know what? But the thing is, you mentioned that. Okay, so I have the list now. Yeah, Alabama. So this is the previous five drafts before this one. Alabama had 48 draft picks. Ohio State had 45. Alabama had 16 first rounders. Ohio State had 15. The median draft position for Ohio State was number 70. The median draft position for Alabama was 50.5. So
that's the only number that's way different.
Okay. But how different is that than what we always talk about with the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry? When we say Ohio State has this many more five stars and this many more four stars, and you go, okay, it doesn't sound like that much in 1 year. It sounds like a lot over 4 years, and it sounds like an awful lot when you talk about how many players can play on the field at once. And it's the same thing here. Alabama's that much better than Ohio State over each player.
Yeah, well,
player for player.
The disparity between Ohio State and Alabama in recruiting rankings is far closer than it is between Ohio State and Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
It's like not even close
I went back to that 2017 class that Alabama, you know, I think had eight first rounders in it so far.
Yeah. And that's like maybe there's two ways of looking at recruiting classes, too. It's what were they going in and what were they going out? So going out, it's probably the best one ever.
Alabama's was a bigger class that year than Ohio State's. But, I mean, it's hard to argue with the results in either case.
But the reason why I'm using this disparity as an example, Andy, is because we're trying to figure out with similar recruiting results at the highest level of college football, the results have been absolutely lopsided. They're not even comparable. So that is a good way to veer into the next discussion, though.
Well, can I ask a question potentially?
Sure.
Would this be a potential reason? Alabama is more tested during the season than Ohio State?
Maybe. Maybe that's it.
Maybe.
But then Big Ten had the second most draft picks this year. Like the Big Ten isn't the SEC. I'm not pretending that it is.
Who's Georgia?
There's no Georgia. Sometimes Penn State's really good. And I think you can make a case that for as talented as Georgia has been in the past, that they've had one truly elite team and the rest are Penn State.
Who's LSU?
No, it's, trust me, you don't have to go down the list.
Yeah.
I get it. I know that the SEC is far superior. Maybe that's it. I don't know. Maybe that's it. But you would think, too, that being tested at a high level that often would also put you in a situation where you miss the playoff more and they don't. So, you know, the fact of the – and we just saw what happened head-to-head. Now, I don't think that Alabama's best team of the Saban era potentially compared to last year's Ohio State team, which was worse than the team from the year before, is always like – you can't just take that one game and say here's where the two programs are. I think they'll probably be closer on the field if they play again this year or in the next few years. Especially considering the recruiting classes they both just signed the last 2 years.
I think you're taking this most recent head-to-head result maybe a little bit too much to heart. Because
no, but it's not just this most recent one, though. It's also the total number of national titles.
Teams have played, yeah. But a lot of that's circumstances. If the 2019 if the 2019 teams had played, Ohio State probably wins that game. Maybe wins that game.
I know, but neither of them were the best team in the league that year anyway, in the sport that year.
Oh, I know, because LSU was historically good.
I'm just saying, like, some of it is circumstance. I think this year's result was circumstance. Alabama wasn't going to lose to anybody this year.
No.
But over the course of time, it is infallibly much, much better at Alabama. So if that's the case between two teams that recruit at the highest level incomparably, then when you start going on to the Michigan discussion, it's easily explainable why they can't beat Ohio State. They don't have the same talent. But then you also ask yourself, well, if Michigan had five first-round draft picks this year, why did they suck? And it's just like, well, that Tom Herman piece, that development piece, that game planning piece, that culture piece is clearly absent at Michigan. So, like, it's not just about – apples to apples, stars to stars, class to class. Ohio State's classes, I mean, Michigan's are dwarfed by Ohio State. But on top of that, Michigan's teams, regardless of the direct comparison between Ohio State and the Wolverines, should be a much better football team in general than they've been. I don't care against Penn State, against Wisconsin, against all the other teams in the Big Ten that they aren't blowing out. So it's certainly a situation where the coaching staff or the strength staff or the recruiting coordinator, all the things that they just replaced, or, you know, is the issue. And if these guys that they just hired aren't the issue, then it's the coach, which Michigan has put itself in a position to buy out very easily in the near future if it's him. So, but there's something clearly missing outside of just what's going on there with the recruiting results. The recruiting results are losing and the development is losing.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Now it makes me think about Alabama again, and maybe it is just Saban. You know,
if it's just Saban.
You know, he loses Scott Cochran, who is kind of the last original guy. And kind of his consigliere, the strength coach, the guy who had the most contact with everybody on the team. He goes to Georgia to become an on-field coach. And you think, okay, he's now turned over his entire coaching staff since 2017. And now he's lost the guy who was the consistent piece. They still got better. And they hired the new guys from Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about what he's had to retool from a coaching standpoint and his assistants, it's insane. If you think about the amount of talent that he loses every year and still maintains the best team or one of the best teams, it's insane. If you look at the total number of draft picks, it's insane. And if you look at the recruiting results, it's insane. And it's different people under him doing it all the time. So like at a certain point, it is Saban. So I guess the idea of...
I don't think most people are capable of creating that sort of top-down mentality where
I think the answer to the parity problem in college football is just when is Saban retiring? Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, it sounds funny, but is that not the reality we're living in right now? He is so good that he's ruining the sport.
Think about how much the SEC opens up if you don't have a replacement who is as good as Saban. Because all these SEC schools have been working damn hard to catch him. And some have gotten close. So if you get someone who's only 92% as good as him, you're getting caught.
Right. And listen, if he retired tomorrow, I don't know, like Mario Cristobal is like a major name that would pop up there. Dabo Sweeney would even be a name. I don't know how realistic. I'm just using names that
I don't think Dabo would take it, but Mario would be the logical one, you'd think, who could kind of continue what they're
and
doing.
I'm a huge fan of Mario. I think that what he's doing in the recruiting realm on the West Coast is making the Pac-12, hopefully, more competitive and more relevant in the years to come. But I don't think that he comes even close to what Saban's doing there.
Well,
there is
no
replacement for Saban.
Nick Saban's got some Benjamin Button thing going on. I mean, he looks younger.
He looks great.
Every time
he's
I see him.
Yeah.
I don't think he's retiring. I don't think he's retiring anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't know. What, is he in his early 70s?
He will be 70 on Halloween.
Okay. So he realistically has another, I think you could say he could have another decade in him.
I'm sorry, rest of college football. He always said, and he told me this for a story I wrote a few years ago. I remember sitting in his office and I was asking him about just some long-term type stuff. And he said, I'll leave before I let it go down. So if there's any chance Alabama's going to slip, he's going to retire, is basically what he'll know when he's lost it. Just like he knows before everybody else what he should do in terms of, I'm going to change this recruiting philosophy. I'm going to tweak this schematic philosophy. He'll know before everybody else does. But I don't see that anything that being anywhere close right now.
Well, yeah, because he just signed the best recruiting class in the history of the rankings and won a national championship. So both aspects of it are A+. And the one thing I will say, like if you had to say, like, what is Nick Saban's best attribute? You know, without being in the room with him every single day. And we all saw the recruiting pitch leak. I mean, that was savage. But it's his undying ability to adapt and not let his ego get in the way of where things are going.
Yes.
And I think that he understands that if you stay stagnant in the sport, you stay losing. I think he understands that just because a coach has been fired doesn't mean he's not a brilliant coordinator or assistant with how many careers that he's helped revive. I think his offense, when it was the I formation, Michigan State playing in mud look, they went to a spread. He got offensive coordinators that understood the new offensive philosophies that they should be running. When recruiting changes happen, Alabama's at the forefront of those recruiting changes. And as we all know, recruiting is a idea that's in flux at all times. And I think that is the talent, the most talented thing about the guy, is understanding where he's deficient and hiring people that will help him with those deficiencies, then also not remaining deficient in anything because he's so quick to learn and adapt to where the things are going. So I think that he is the perfect mold of a head coach. And I just don't know if that, you know, they've got a statue of him in Alabama. They should build a statue of him in New Brunswick? Wait, not New Brunswick. What's Rutgers again? Piscataway. Sorry, I had a brain fart. The birthplace of college football, they should build a statue of Nick Saban because, you know, that's coach to you. We should not be calling him Nick Saban. That's coach.
Sorry, Alabama TV reporter who once fished with Nick Saban. I will show proper respect. But no, yeah, put a statue of Nick Saban in front of every stadium just to remind them, here's who you're trying to beat.
Yeah.
Every single one of you.
And I know that he and Bill Belichick have a bromance going. And it's like when you start thinking about coaches and dominance in the history of sports, I think that what Bill Belichick did at New England is probably harder because the parity
The way the league
in the NFL
so
and the way the league is set up is so much harder. But like the way that – has any other coach in the history of sports completely – at a time where at least they're this competitive ever like rendered everybody else hopeless?
John Wooden.
That was like before.
Yeah, but it was the 70s. It's basketball. You can't take all the talent in basketball. It's not like you couldn't have 100 guys on a basketball scholarship. It just wouldn't.
Listen, if John Wooden is the only thing that we can come up with, then that's an illustration of the point we're making. So like
I think Gino Auriemma did it for a while, but he's not doing it anymore.
Right. It's like at a certain point, too, it's like you always say on this show, if you think things are staying the same, it always feels like that in the moment, but they never stay the same. And it's just like Alabama's greatness is at a point where it's like the only way it changes is if their coach retires.
Well, and the thing is, so how it's affected the sport, and this is, we've talked about this a bunch. We will talk about it a lot more because I know people are tired of this. And I know people want to see something different, and I get that. But here's the deal. It won't last much longer in the grand scheme. You know, he's not going to coach forever. And enjoy it a little bit.
Because you're probably never going to see anything like this again.
It's like funny too, because I like to think like the psyche of a fan. Like the whole point of being a fan is for you to root for a program that can call itself the best in any given year. And it's like, if you're an Alabama fan, your program and the team that you root for every single Saturday in the fall has rendered the rest of the sport hopeless. How much more impactful is that than just winning a national championship? Like, you have reached peak fan achievement. The reason why fans exist and they spend so much time and money and thought to support the teams that they love. It's like, if you're an Alabama fan, I feel like I'd be like looking around like, okay, now what? Because it's like, how could it? It can't get better. And I guess every national championship is better than the national championship before it. And, you know, you always hope for next year. But at a certain point, it's just like, is this even fun for Alabama fans anymore? I guess I'm going to get a bunch of tweets saying it absolutely is. But, you know,
I think it is. But I hear them sometimes. And Aaron Suttles, our Alabama beat writer, will tell you this. They can get kind of picky because they're so used to winning. Like, the things they complain about are so different than the things that, like, a Michigan State fan would complain about.
Yeah. Random ranking. 5 funniest Alabama fan complaints next week.
Oh, good Lord. We'll get Suttles on. He'll have some doozies, I'm sure.
Yeah. So,
well, we have nothing to complain about because the draft was fun. We've got more to come. Spring practice is over. We're going to start previewing the season. Ari, I was thinking about this. You know, we've got our state of the programs running now on The Athletic every day. You got a different FBS team that we are giving you a complete breakdown of every single day. We're going to do all 130. There's going to be a season this year. We know this. Like, last year, we were like, what the hell is going to happen? This year, there's going to be a college football season. It sounds like there's going to be fans in the stands. It sounds like the games will be played as scheduled. And I realize anything can happen, but it kind of feels like we may be getting back to something close to normal. I can't tell you how exciting that is.
I feel normal. I feel like we're there.
So I just want to start, and we can start doing this in the next few weeks. I want to start talking hardcore about what is going to happen this coming season, because I think that a lot of people kind of checked out on the games last year because everybody, I mean, look, a lot of people had more important things going on in their lives. This year, you can probably think about football again, and you'll have, you know, things will be under control enough that we can take a little mental break from all the important stuff and talk about college football and talk about games that we're excited about. This is going to be amazing, Ari. This is going to be everybody's favorite season. So we got to start getting them ready.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm ready for it.
All right. Well, we'll start doing that here in the next few weeks as we start to get you ready for the 2021 season, of which there will be one. We're sorry we depressed you today by saying that as long as Nick Saban coaches, there's no hope for your team. But that's okay, because there's always hope in the banana stand. Always.
Always.
We'll talk to you Wednesday.